How did you happen to get in here?
I ran here. You scared the daylights out of me last night.
Seems like the truth shouldn't scare anybody, man or boy.
Thing getting you?
No. I'm just thinking about public reaction to all this.
This is Dragon King Dark, episode number 323. I am Carl Stern, your host from WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, Dark Matter Digital Network, my own website, which I sincerely hope you'll visit, WhenItWasCool.com. You have dropped into a series, an ongoing series, called 100 of the Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History. Now then, don't worry. You don't have to listen to the whole series. You can join it in progress just fine. We aren't ranking these in any particular order. I've just taken 100 moments that forever changed popular culture for the worse. Now then, we're over halfway through this series right now. You can listen to the entire series at whenitwascool.com. Just go to the Dragon King Dark podcast tab, and you'll see this particular podcast. We have numerous podcasts on the When It Was Cool podcasting network. In fact, in our archives, we have almost 2,000 shows. We hope you will stop by and support us, become a Patreon supporter, where you'll get access not only to this podcast, but many others dealing with retro pop culture. In amongst this series, 100 of the Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History, we're zeroing in on three in particular right now, sort of a mini-series within a series. And these three specifically look at the pop culture genre of true crime. That has become a huge thing in recent years. There are numerous true crime podcasts, as of course all of you obviously know. You're listening to a podcast. You probably consume other podcasts. You're well aware of how many different true crime podcasts there are. Some have been incredibly successful. But it's also spawned more than that. Before that, you had the various documentaries. You go to any streaming network, there are multiple documentaries and talking about true crime. There's even TV channels devoted specifically to true crime, both on satellite and on streaming services. I can't tell you how many. I bet there's close to a dozen channels solely dedicated on my Roku to just true crime. It is very definitely a very popular and growing subsection of popular culture. A couple weeks ago, we looked at one of the earliest personalities and entertainment figures that sort of got the true crime ball rolling, and that was John Walsh through America's Most Wanted and the various things he did, the murder of his son, Adam Walsh. We talked about it and how that led to the creation of numerous things that today are just part of our everyday culture. He was very instrumental in starting. Anytime you walk into a Walmart or a major retailer and see those missing children posters there, you can thank John Walsh and his advocacy for pushing for stuff like that. The Center for Missing and Exploited Children, that started there. And many amateur sleuths jumped on board that case and researched that case and did numerous documentaries, even a made-for-TV movie about that case. It became part of the overall larger popular culture. He even had a segment on The Simpsons, famously. Then we talked last week about one of the biggest ones as far as amateur true crime sleuths that are out there. There's no telling. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of podcasts, documentaries, and TV specials that have been devoted to the JonBenet Ramsey case, a case that is still open, a case that is still unsolved. But this has got to be almost the granddaddy of them all. If ever there was a time where Everybody, it seemed, in America was tuned to their television, Court TV. Remember, that was one of the early big, super successful true crime channels. It would have to be the O.J. Simpson case, and this one captured America's attention. It has been talked about, discussed in popular culture. It has been parodied and spoofed and studied from numerous very serious angles. Many amateur sleuths and podcasters and documentarians have examined, re-examined, and quadruple examined this case. There's probably not a person in the United States of America who can't tell you what Coca-Cola, Elvis, and O.J. Simpson are. So Orenthal James Simpson, born July 9th, 1947. He's presently 74 years old. He's one of those, epic fall from glory cases. We talked about Bill Cosby in this very series just several weeks back, if you want to go back and listen to that show, where you had this, you know, America's dad. You had this very pleasant, family-friendly comedian. Everybody seemed to love him. There didn't seem to be any dirt that stuck to the guy. And then all sorts of accusations come out, court cases, prison stints, all this goes on about this very, very beloved cultural figure. In a similar way, you've got O.J. Simpson. He was a gigantic sports star. Man, when I was a kid in the 1970s, O.J. Simpson was a huge deal. He played for the Buffalo Bills in the NFL from 1969 to 1977, and then finished out 1978-79 with the San Francisco 49ers. He is in the College Football Hall of Fame. He went to college at CCSF for 1 year, and then went to USC, of course, where he became pro football material at. And then he went, not only from there, he transitioned his extremely successful professional football career to acting, and appeared in many, many movies. He was kind of a rising sort of comedy star. He even started, he had some walk-on uncredited roles as far back as 1960s. He was in an episode of Dragnet in 1968 in an uncredited role. In the 1970s, when he was a big football star, he appeared in Here's Lucy as himself in an episode titled The Big Game. O.J. Simpson's The Juice is on the Loose, a TV documentary in 1974, A Killing Force in 1976. He was in Roots in 1977, all the way up Goldie and the Boxer. Then when he retired from professional football, man, he was in some big time movies. His role in the Naked Gun series was very highly acclaimed for his comedic work. He was in The Naked Gun from The Files of Police Squad, Naked Gun 2½, The Smell of Fear, Naked Gun 33⅓, The Final Insult. Those were very successful comedy movies in the 1980s and the 1990s. And then it all came to a huge end, very nebulous ending as well. He ends up not ever being convicted of the thing he's probably most infamous for, although he did end up in prison for something tangentially related to a double murder. Let's back up just a bit and talk about O.J. Simpson just a minute. When I was a kid, man, he was on everything. You turned on the TV, and there O.J. Simpson was. If he was a football fan, no question. He was first selection in the 1969 draft. Took O.J. Simpson, but he ended up getting what was then the largest contract in professional sports history. You hearing this? Largest contract right out of the gate, $650,000 at the time, which today isn't even a half of a signing bonus, but back then it was huge money. O.J. Simpson entered professional football with high expectations, but struggled during his first 3 years, averaging only 622 yards per season. Buffalo Bills coach John Roach, not wanting to build an offense around one running back, assigned Simpson to do blocking and receiving duties at the expense of running the ball. In 1971, that was the year I was born, as a matter of fact, Roch resigned as head coach, and the Bills brought in Harvey Johnson. Now, despite Johnson devising a new offense for O.J. Simpson, O.J. Simpson was still ineffective that year, and after 1971 season, the Bills fired Coach Johnson and brought in Lou Saban as head coach. Well, Saban built the offense around O.J. Simpson, and here we go. In 1972, Simpson rushed for over 1,000 yards for the first time in his career. League-leading total of 1,251 yards. In 1973, O.J. Simpson became the first player to break the highly coveted 2,000-yard rushing mark. He's setting records at 2,003 total rushing yards and 12 touchdowns. O.J. Simpson broke the mark during the last game of the season against the New York Jets with a 7-yard rush. That same game saw him break Jim Brown's single-season rushing record of 1,863 yards. He won the NFL MVP award and the Burt Bell Award. Simpson gained more than 1,000 rushing yards for each of the next three seasons. He did not lead the league in rushing in 1974, but did cross the 1,000-yard barrier despite a knee injury. He's a huge, successful athlete. In a divisional game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, O.J. Simpson rushed for 49 yards on 15 attempts and caught a touchdown pass, but the Buffalo Bills lost the game. Simpson won the rushing title again in 1975, over 1,800 yards. He had a career-high 426 receiving yards and 7 receiving touchdowns that season. He led the league again in 1976. A low light in that season came during a game against the Patriots a few weeks earlier when defensive end Mel Lunsford and several other Patriots defenders stuffed the superstar running back for no gain, but as O.J. Simpson tried to continue driving forward, Lunsford body slammed him to the ground. O.J. Simpson got up and punched Lunsford, which prompted Lunsford to swing back. Bills offensive lineman Reggie McKenzie then jumped on Lunsford's back, but Lunsford bent down and flung McKenzie over his head and went back to swinging at O.J. Simpson before a melee of the two teams stopped the fight and ended up in a pile on the field. Both Lunsford and Simpson were ejected from the game as the Patriots' solid defense persisted with New England going on to a 2010 win on their way to finishing the 1976 season 11-3. The Bills finished 2-12, and O.J. Simpson played in only 7 games in 1977 due to injury. For the 1978 season, the Buffalo Bills traded O.J. Simpson to his hometown, San Francisco 49ers, for a series of draft picks. And O.J. Simpson was there for 2 seasons. He rushed for over 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns. His final NFL game was December 16, 1979. It was a losing effort to the Atlanta Falcons, 31-21. His final NFL play ever was a 10-yard run on a 3rd-and-10 for first down. So a hugely successful NFL career. Now then, from there, he transitions into acting. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, you know, he had been dabbling in acting as early as the late 1960s. He began while he was at the University of Southern California, appeared in an episode of Dragnet in an uncredited role. And then even, of course, famously, he was in Roots. 1977, Towering Inferno, which was a big hit TV movie in 1979. And, you know, he made the transition to the big screen as well. Of course, as we talked about in those Naked Gun movies, which were, of course, a knockoff of Smoking Gun. He also, as you can imagine, with this Hollywood exploits and huge, athletic career. He had sponsorships on top of sponsorships. He sold everything from Chevrolet to all things in between. I mean, honey baked hams. He was cowboy boots. I mean, it was not unusual at all. If you were a kid in the 1970s and early 1980s, see O.J. Simpson everywhere. I mean, he's this, larger than life athlete in an era where larger-than-life athletes were a big, big deal. His family life, well, that's where things are going to go bad for O.J. On June 24th, 1967, at the age of 19, O.J. Simpson married Marguerite Whitley. Together, they had three children. One of his children, in August of 1979, actually was killed in an accident, drowned in the family's swimming pool. Only 2 years old. O.J. Simpson met Nicole Brown, and we all know where this is going from here. Met her in 1977. She was working as a waitress at a nightclub called the Daisy. At the time, O.J. Simpson was still married to his first wife, so he was philandering around. Began dating Nicole Brown, and he and his wife ultimately divorced in March 1979. Nicole Brown and O.J. Simpson were married February 2nd, 1985. So they're together for, you know, over 5 years before they finally get married. The couple had two children, one born in 1985 and one born in 1988. Marriage lasted 7 years, during which O.J. Simpson pleaded no contest to a spousal abuse charge in 1989. Nicole Brown filed for divorce on February 25th, 1992, citing irreconcilable differences, which in divorce cases, that's the catch-all for everything from adultery to abuse to we just can't get along to I'm having an affair. Oftentimes, they'll just agree for irreconcilable differences to save any public embarrassment for anybody involved. In 1993, after the divorce, Nicole Brown and O.J. Simpson made an attempt at reconciliation, but according to Sheila Weller, quote, they were a dramatic, fractious, mutually obsessed couple before they married, after they married, after they divorced in 1992, and after they reconciled, what we would call in today's terminology a toxic marriage. But there's no sense in it going the direction it went. Now then, I bet if you polled most people in the United States, would they say that O.J. Simpson murdered Nicole Brown Simpson along with Ron Goldman? Well, I don't know. In 2016, I can tell you this, 83% of white Americans and 57% of black Americans believed O.J. Simpson committed the murder. So very polarized among racial lines, but in both instances, over half the people think he done it. But he's never been convicted, so we can't lawfully call him a murderer. He did end up in prison, but not for that. On June 12, 1994, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman were found stabbed to death outside of Nicole's condo in the Brentwood area of Los Angeles, in a tale that's familiar to anyone who was around in 1994. O.J. Simpson was a person of interest in their murders. O.J. Simpson did not turn himself in. Very famously, on June 17, 1994, he became the object of a low-speed car chase by police while riding as passenger in a white 1993 Ford Bronco SUV. It was actually driven by his longtime friend, Al Cowlings. Many people forget that. They think it was O.J. driving the truck. It was not. TV stations interrupted coverage of the 1994 NBA Finals to broadcast the incident live. So to the largest possible viewing audience, you get to see the low-speed chase of O.J. Simpson. An estimated audience of 95 million people. The event's been described as the most famous ride on American shores since Paul Revere's. Very famously, that statement being uttered. That quote actually comes from Crimes of the Century, from Leopold to Loeb to O.J. Simpson, published in 2014. The pursuit, arrest, and trial of O.J. Simpson were among the most widely publicized events in American history. Very much incited the true crime series or genre of documentaries and TV channels and court TV and all this good stuff. The trial, often characterized as the trial of the century because of its international publicity, culminated after 11 months on October 3rd, 1995, when the jury rendered a verdict of not guilty for the two murders. An estimated 100 million people nationwide tuned in to watch or listen to the verdict announcement. Most people can tell you exactly where they were at the time that was announced. I was in a Sears department store at the Decatur, Alabama Mall, watching it on TV along with probably 100 other people standing there in the TV section. It was not to be missed. Following Simpson's acquittal, no additional arrests or convictions related to the murders were ever made. Immediate reaction to the verdict was known for its division along racial lines. Does this sound familiar? It's all the way back in 1994, and here to this very day, we continue to be divided. And these high-profile, media-driven circuses like this continue to divide us. A poll of Los Angeles County residents showed that most African Americans there felt justice had been served by the not guilty verdict, while the majority of whites and Latinos opined that it had not. O.J. Simpson's integrated defense counsel team included Johnny Cochran, Robert Kardashian. Does that last name sound, these names sound familiar to you? Robert Shapiro. Ever heard of him? F. Lee Bailey. Marsha Clark was lead prosecutor for the state of California, all becoming celebrities in their own right. That wasn't the end of it, though. Following the acquittal on the criminal charges, there's still a wrongful death civil trial. And this gives us our genesis of what would actually end up with going criminal with O.J. Simpson in prison. A long way around to get there, but here's what happened. Ron Goldman's family filed a civil lawsuit against Simpson. Daniel Petroselli represented plaintiff Fred Goldman, who was Ron Goldman's father, while Robert Baker represented O.J. Simpson. Superior Court Judge Hiroshi Fujisaki presided, and he barred, smartly so, television and cameras, radio equipment, courtroom sketches from the courtroom. And on October 23rd, 1996, opening statements were made, and on January 16, 1997, yes, it took months to hear this case, both sides rested their case. On February 5th, it would take almost another month before the verdict was rendered. A civil jury in Santa Monica, California, unanimously found Simpson liable for the wrongful death and battery against Goldman and battery against Brown. Simpson was ordered to pay $33,500,000 in damages. In February 1999, an auction of O.J. Simpson's Heisman Trophy, yes, he won the Heisman Trophy, and other belongings netted almost $500,000, which went to the Goldman family. Goldman family also tried to collect O.J. Simpson's NFL monthly pension, which you about see the difference between yesterday and today, was only $28,000 monthly. Today, it would be astronomically higher than that. But they failed in collecting on that. In 1997, O.J. Simpson defaulted on his mortgage at the home in which he had lived for 20 years on North Rockingham Avenue, and the lender foreclosed on the property. In July of 1998, the house was demolished by its next owner, Kenneth Abdallah, an investment banker. On September 5th, 2006, Goldman's father took Simpson back to court to obtain control over Simpson's right to publicity for the purposes of satisfying the judgment in the civil court case. As you can imagine, with the tainted image of O.J. Simpson, he's now got a very hard time earning money, especially substantial money. He's got this giant, unpayable lien against him. And the Goldman family is rightfully trying to get whatever they can, however they can get it from him. So they have to take him back to court. On January 4, 2007, a federal judge issued a restraining order prohibiting O.J. Simpson from spending any advance he may have received on a canceled book deal and a TV interview about the 1994 murders. The matter was dismissed before trial for lack of prosecution, or lack of jurisdiction, rather. On January 19, 2007, a California state judge issued an additional restraining order ordering O.J. Simpson to restrict his spending to ordinary and necessary living expenses. On March 13, 2007, a judge prevented O.J. Simpson from receiving any further compensation from the defunct book deal and TV interview, and the judge ordered the bundled book rights to be auctioned. In August 2007, a Florida bankruptcy court awarded the rights to the book to the Goldman family to partially satisfy the unpaid civil judgment. Originally titled, and this was a famous kerfluffle if ever there was one, just an extraordinarily controversial deal, the book titled If I Did It, it was renamed If I Did It, Confessions of the Killer, with the word if reduced in size to such an extent that it appears within the width of the large red I in the title, making the title appear to read I Did It, Confessions of the Killer. Can you imagine the audacity of that? The state of California claims O.J. Simpson owes $1.44 million in back taxes. A tax lien, in addition to all this other, was filed against him. In the late 1990s, O.J. Simpson attempted to register O.J. Simpson, O.J., and the Juice as trademarks for a broad range of goods, including figurines, trading cards, sportswares, etc., etc. A concerned citizen, William Ritchie, sued to oppose the granting of federal registration on the grounds that doing so would be immoral and scandalous. O.J. eventually gave up the attempt. Good for William B. Ritchie. In February 2001, Simpson was arrested again, and this time in Miami-Dade County, Florida, for simple battery and burglary of an occupied conveyance for yanking the glass off of another motorist during a traffic dispute 3 months earlier. He was tried but quickly acquitted of both charges in October 2001. So he got away again, or was not guilty again. On October 4th, 2001, O.J. Simpson's Miami home was searched by the FBI on suspicion of ecstasy possession and money laundering. The FBI had received a tip that O.J. Simpson was involved in a major drug trafficking ring after 10 other suspects were arrested in the case. Simpson's home was thoroughly searched for 2 hours, but no illegal drugs were discovered. No arrest or formal charges were ever filed. However, investigators uncovered equipment capable of stealing satellite television programming, which eventually led to Simpson being sued in federal court. Still nothing. On July 4th, 2002, O.J. Simpson was arrested in Miami-Dade County, Florida, for water speeding through a manatee protection zone. The misdemeanor regulation was dropped. Simpson was fined for speeding. In March 2004, DirecTV accused him of pirating their broadcasting signals. I must have known at least three or four people who had these satellite Delia Bobs back in the day. Seemed like many people had these, but O.J. Simpson got nailed with one, so the company won a $25,000 judgment. Well, you know, you just straws of hay on a haystack at this point, right? But on the night of September 13, 2007, the worm turns, and O.J. Simpson finally gets into something, sort of, he can't get out of. And, I guess he did, but he didn't. Well, let's talk about it right after the break.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.
On the night of September 13, 2007, a group of men led by O.J. Simpson himself entered a room at Palace Station Hotel and Casino and took sports memorabilia at gunpoint. This resulted in O.J. Simpson being questioned by the police. O.J. Simpson admitted to taking the items, which he said had been stolen from him, but denied breaking in the hotel room. He also denied that he or anyone else carried a gun, and he was released after questioning. However, 2 days later, O.J. Simpson was arrested and initially held without bail. along with three other men, O.J. Simpson was charged with multiple felony counts, including criminal conspiracy, kidnapping, assault, robbery, and using a deadly weapon. Bail was set at $125,000 with stipulations that Simpson have no contact with the co-defendants and that he surrender his passport. Simpson did not enter a plea. By the end of October 2007, all three of Simpson's co-defendants had plea bargained with the prosecution in the Clark County, Nevada court case. Walter Alexander and Charles H. Cashmore accepted plea agreements in exchange for reduced charges and their testimony against Simpson and three other co-defendants, including testimony that guns were, in fact, used in the robbery. Co-defendant Michael McClinton told a Las Vegas judge that he, too, would plead guilty to reduced charges and testify against Simpson that guns were used in the robbery. After the hearings, the judge ordered that Simpson be tried for the robbery. November 8, 2007. Simpson had a preliminary hearing to decide whether he would be tried for the charges. He was held for trial on all 12 counts. O.J. Simpson pleaded not guilty on November 29, 2007, with initial trial date set for April 7, 2008, although it was soon set for September 8th to give the defense more time for the case. So in January 2008, O.J. Simpson was taken into custody in Florida and was extradited to Las Vegas, where he was incarcerated at the Clark County Jail for violating terms of his bail by attempting to contact C.J. Stewart, who is a co-defendant in the trial. District Attorney David Roger of the Clark County provided District Court Judge Jackie Glass with evidence that Simpson had violated his bail terms. A hearing took place January 16, 2008. Glass raised Simpson's bail to $250,000 in order that he remain in jail until at least 15% was paid in cash. Simpson posted the bond that evening and returned to Miami the next day. Amazing. He was able to get, you know, tens of thousands of dollars when the Goldman family is sitting there trying to dig any way they can to get money out of this guy. So what happened? Welp, he finally gets dinged with something. O.J. Simpson and his co-defendant were found guilty of all charges on October 3rd, 2008. On October 10th, 2008, O.J. Simpson's counsel moved for a new trial on the ground of judicial errors and insufficient evidence. Simpson's attorney announced he would appeal to the Nevada Supreme Court if Judge Glass denied the motion. Attorney for Simpson's co-defendant, C.J. Stewart, petitioned for a new trial, alleging Stewart should have been tried separately and cited possible misconduct by the jury foreman. Simpson faced a possible life sentence with parole on the kidnapping charge and mandatory prison time for the armed robbery. On December 5, 2008, O.J. Simpson was sentenced to a total of 33 years in prison with the possibility of parole after 9 years in 2017. Well, if you're saying to yourself, well, it hasn't been 33 years since December 5th, 2008, and O.J. Simpson appears to be out, you would be correct. So how did that come about? Well, that thus is the prison system for you. You're, no matter what you're sentenced to in prison, you're never going to serve that amount of time. That is one of the great myths perpetrated on the American public. They think, oh, so-and-so got 10 years in prison for robbing that store. Well, so-and-so is not spending 10 years in prison. You'll be darn lucky if he spends three, not spending 10. Nor did O.J. Simpson. On September 4, 2009, the Nevada Supreme Court denied a request for bail during Simpson's appeal. In October 2010, the Nevada Supreme Court affirmed his convictions, denied to have a new trial. And he served his sentence at the Lovelock Correctional Center, where his inmate ID number was 1027820. A Nevada judge agreed on October 19, 2012, to reopen the armed robbery and kidnapping case against O.J. Simpson to determine if the former football star was so badly represented by his lawyers that he should be freed from prison and get another trial. A hearing was held beginning May 13, 2013, to determine if he should get a new trial. But that, too, was denied. But it didn't take long. Just over a year later, July 31st, 2013, the Nevada Parole Board granted O.J. Simpson parole on some convictions, but his imprisonment continued based on the weapons and assault convictions. The board considered Simpson's prior record of criminal convictions and good behavior in prison in coming to the decision. At his parole hearing on July 20, 2017, the board decided to grant Simpson parole with certain parole conditions such as travel restrictions, no contact with co-defendants from the robbery, and not drinking excessively. He was released from prison on October 1, 2017, having served almost 9 years, yes, 33 years in prison, actually is, in his case, 9 years. On December 14, 2021, Simpson was released from parole early. No, he didn't even serve out the entire time on parole for good behavior. He is now a completely free man. O.J. Simpson is everywhere in popular culture. We mentioned the book, If I Did It. There was considerable maelstrom of anger about that at the time, although all rights and proceeds from the book were awarded to Ron Goldman. 1995 Fox Network TV movie, The O.J. Simpson Story. BBC TV documentary, O.J. Simpson, The Untold Story. ID Channel, among with about a million other shows. Trial of the Century, The Real Story. Nicole and O.J. CBS, American Tragedy. O.J. Made in America, a documentary miniseries. The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. The Run of His Life, The People versus O.J. Simpson, 1997, a book. NBC miniseries Law and Order, True Crime. The Menendez Brothers shows O.J. Simpson in jail as well. Crossover into something else, believe it or not. Court TV, obviously, O.J. 25, a 25-part series documenting each week of the trial. On and on it goes. Ever wonder what ended up with the Bronco? Well, I've seen it. I've seen the Ford Bronco O.J. Simpson ran in. How, Carl, might you say you saw it? Well, of all places, it ended up in the Alcatraz East Crime Museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Unbelievable. Well, whether you agree with the verdicts or disagree with the verdicts, think O.J. Simpson's a unconvicted double murderer, kidnapper, robber, burglar, or you think, hey, he's a man that's got a bad rap, doesn't deserve any of this. He was a great football player and movie star. Regardless of your opinion on one O.J. Simpson, the fact remains he has been a huge influence in pop culture in a very dark way. Thank you very much for listening to Dragon King Dark. Hope you'll check out our website, whenitwascool.com, where we cover popular culture, retro pop culture, and much, much more. You can hear the entirety of all Dragon King Dark episodes at whenitwascool.com by clicking on the Dragon King Dark tab. If you become a Patreon supporter, you're going to have instant access to almost 2,000 podcasts on retro pop culture, everything from superhero movies to sports, to movies, to TV, pro wrestling history, other sports history, you name it, toys, music. We've got lots of music content. Look, if you're a fan of popular culture, and who isn't, some aspect of it has undoubtedly touched your life. We cover it. We want to talk about it, talk with you about it. We have a great, great, thriving, record-setting every month here lately, Patreon community, and we need you to participate. You'll find it free of trolls. You'll find it free of drama. You'll find it just a fun place to hang out and talk about popular culture with other people, as we put out a show almost every single day. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back here again soon with another show.
When It Was Cool is your home for retro pop culture fun. We feature hundreds of podcasts on classic TV shows, movies, retro sports, toys, history, music, wrestling, and more. Tons of free podcasts. And hit any Patreon button for a deeper dive into our premium shows. whenitwascool.com. Fun and friendly.